بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين. In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful. Today we are going to start lesson 3, and that is about the history of philosophy in the West in the rest of 18th century and also 19th century. At the end there is a very short and brief discussion about one of the contemporary philosophical schools in the West, and that's pragmatism, which belongs to the 20th century. But let's see whether we can reach that point or not. As you remember, we said that Immanuel Kant, the well-known German philosopher, was very influential, and many people after him either followed him or in a way or another were influenced by his ideas. Many people. In the late 18th century and first half of 19th century, there were a group of German philosophers, people like Fichte, like Schelling, who were very much impressed by the ideas of Kant. But at the same time, they saw that there are some weak points, some shortcomings in his ideas. So they tried to compensate those weak points. They tried to supplement Kant's philosophy with some ideas of their own. They had, of course, not exactly the same view about the world and about the being. But what was common between these German philosophers was that, first of all, they were all interested in Kant's ideas in general. And secondly, that they all started from an individual and personal view about the world and decided to explain being, existence, and also to explain how multiplicity emerges from unity. This is a very important and profound question in the whole history of philosophy. How to establish a relation between the one and the multiple. How to explain the emergence of multiplicity from unity. This is very important. And these people were very much using also the poetic literature, the poetic style in presenting their ideas. And for this general atmosphere which existed among these philosophers, they were called romantic philosophers. Romantic philosophers. And as I said, they were all German. One of the very famous one among this group was Fichte. And he was one of the students of Kant. So he studied with Kant, and he had direct relation with Kant. He thought that there are some points, some ideas in Kant's philosophy which are very interesting. First of all, it was very interesting that Kant believed in free will. As you remember, we said that Kant said that free will is necessary, and although we cannot prove it by theoretical reason, we must prove it through practical reason. So he was totally in favor of free will. Fichte was impressed by Kant's insistence and emphasis on free will. This was one point. The second point, he was also impressed by Kant's idea about the morality, about the practical reason and their independence and their autonomous state. This was very interesting to Fichte. He was following the same line, and because he was so impressed in free will, he went to extremes. He said that the theoretical reason looks at everything in a fixed and determined way, looks at the nature as it is determined, it's necessary. But he said we must establish a worldview in which freedom, in which possibility of different stories for the same event must be accommodated. So he said, because of this, we must make the whole world, the whole nature, subordinate to ego, to human self, human I-ness, human ego. And we shouldn't think that the world is necessary and is independent from our free will. So this was the idea, which may look beautiful, may look interesting, but it has very, very important philosophical implications, and it's very difficult to accept these implications. Of course, if you want to just say something as poem, it's interesting, but if you want to be really committed to the implications of your idea, I think it's very, very difficult to commit yourself to such ideas. Anyway, this interest in free will caused romantics to believe in the fundamentality of spirit, because one of the characteristics of spirit, human spirit, is free will. So they believed in the fundamentality of spirit, which in a sense is acceptable to other people as well, but not in the sense that those people had in their mind. Of course, we also believe in fundamentality of the spirit in a sense that we say that our existence is composed of our body and our spirit, and we believe that our spirit is the most important aspect of our being, and our personality, our character is built up by our spirit. So in a sense, we believe that spirit is fundamental. But when these people say fundamentality of a spirit, it means in not relation to human existence, human beings. It means that spirit is fundamental and underlying even in relation to the nature. And when we come to the Hegelian philosophy, we will see how this was more developed and how it was made more clear. Anyway, these people had this idea, and of course, after Renaissance in West, no single philosophical school could dominate the whole West and could survive for many, many centuries. Most of them were dominating some parts of Europe, not all parts, or some people in some parts, and some people in the same land maybe were interested in other ways of thinking philosophically. Or, for example, for one century, two centuries, some philosophical ideas very, very much welcomed. Then later, it went into decline. Of course, in philosophy, very rarely you find some school which totally disappear. There may be at least few people, handful people, number of people, who still believe some philosophical ideas which no one is in favor of that today. But still, you know, you can find them. But this is a very common point in Western philosophy after Renaissance, that no philosophical thought could be prevailing and dominating whole Europe and whole West, including the United States late. So, these people, the Romantic philosophers, who were very much interested in the Kantian ideas, and also they went into some extremes about human free will and fundamentality of spirit, they themselves could not survive very much, but their ideas caused Hegel, inspired Hegel, to present a very important and influential school of philosophy in the West. Again, Hegelian philosophy itself did not survive, but it was important, and it had some advocates, some proponents in different parts of Europe, and it also inspired Karl Marx and Engels to develop Marxism. So, when I said Hegelian philosophy was important, I do not mean that it was important to the extent that it could convince everyone. No, but it was influential. So we mean by importance that something which was taken seriously and had some influences upon the intellectual atmosphere. So Hegel, who was impressed by the idea of Kant and then Romantic philosophers, thought that spirit is so fundamental, so important, and so independent that whole world is nothing other than the absolute spirit and its ideas. This is a very important statement. The whole world is nothing other than an absolute spirit and its ideas and thoughts. So you have one spirit which believers in God may call it God, and everything in the world other than that spirit is one idea that exists in that spirit, or in the mind of that spirit, if you believe that that spirit has a mind. So these trees, flowers, human beings, animals, mountains, all are ideas existing in the mind of that absolute spirit. And the relation, this is also very important, the relation between those ideas is not causal relations. It's logical relation. You know, when we have some concepts in our mind, some ideas in our minds, the way to relate them to each other is to find logical relations between them. For example, we find that this concept is part of the other concept. Or, for example, is implied by the other concept. Or, for example, this proposition leads to the other proposition. Or if you put these two premises together, you could come to the third proposition. So these are the logical relations. In the world outside us, we don't have logical relations. We have causal relations. And logical relations in our mind help us to understand the causal relations outside. So fire burns paper, burns, for example, wood. This is causality. In our mind, we can come to conclusion when there is fire and there is wood that there should be some heat, there should be some extra fire. The fire should burn the wood or the paper. These are the conclusions that we make in our mind so that we can understand what will happen in reality outside. But because Hegel made them one thing, combined them together, so he said that there is only one absolute spirit and everything outside is just an idea, a thing, or it's better to say a thought in the mind of that absolute spirit. So this is the maximum amount of idealism that you could have. But it is called objective idealism because he didn't believe that the world is just an illusion or, for example, is nothing. No, he believed in everything outside. He believed that we are true, we are real, everything outside is real. But he presented an idealistic interpretation of objectivity. So he didn't deny objectivity, but he presented idealistic form of objectivity. So this is why it is called objective idealism. One of the ideas of Hegel was that everything in this spiritual world starts from the simple towards the complicated, from general towards specific, from unity towards multiple and multiplicity. The very underlying, the very basic and fundamental concept, according to Hegel, is existence or being. Just opposite to this concept, we have the concept of nothingness. So you have being and you have nothingness. This is not only the case in relation to these two concepts. No, he believed that everything in this world has this relation of being something and then something opposite to that coming out of it. He called this thesis and antithesis. So being is a thesis and nothingness is antithesis. Then, when these two interact, you will have a third thing, and that is synthesis. For example, here you have being as thesis, you have nothingness as antithesis, and then you have becoming as synthesis. So you have a triangle. Thesis, antithesis, synthesis. And this is a universal pattern. Everything in the world, according to Hegel, must follow the same pattern. And this is why Hegel's philosophy is also known as a form of dialectic, which is based on these thesis and antithesis and synthesis. It is a triadic process. Triadic is from the root TRI, which means three, like triangle. So triadic process of Hegel consists in having something as thesis and then its opposite emerging from it as antithesis and then synthesis, which is the combination and result of interaction of those two. The other thing which is important to mention about Hegel's philosophy was that he believed that history is all fixed according to the principles of dialectic and goes towards the known destiny. And this was some idea which, as we will say, caused lack of interest in Hegel's idea. After Hegel, in early 19th century, we want to discuss about positivism. So we said that there was Kant, then there was Romantic philosophers, then there was Hegel, and I want to now talk after Hegel about positivism. I'm not saying that this was historically after Hegel. I'm saying that our discussion is now after Hegel about positivism. There was a French philosopher and mathematician who lived in the period between 1798 up to 1857. And he is the one who sometimes is referred as father of modern sociology, and that is Auguste Comte. Of course, a spelling is with M, but it's pronounced N. Auguste Comte was a philosopher who were very much interested in empiricism, and he believed that human history has witnessed three stages. Please be very careful about this matter. He says that there was a period, there was a stage in which people were very interested in theology and finding supernatural causes for everything. For example, when there was a rain, there was a flood, there was a storm, they were looking for some supernatural factors. For example, they may thought that it is because God is happy or angry, or if they believed in gods, they may have said, for example, this god or goddess was angry so that he or she sent, for example, flood or a storm, and so on and so forth. So he says this was a period, the stage in which human beings were interested in finding supernatural causes. He calls this the divine stage or the religious stage. The second stage, which was after the first, was the philosophical stage, in which people started to realize that instead of looking for supernatural causes, they can look for some metaphysical causes, some philosophical causes. So they started to say that everything, for example, has a substance, and this substance has these qualities and these effects. And by considering the relationship between different substances, they were analyzing and explaining the events that happen in the world. But the third stage, Auguste Comte says, is the scientific stage, in which no longer people look for supernatural causes or philosophical causes. They look for scientific explanation. In scientific explanation, we are not that much interested, he said. We are not that much interested in explaining why. We are very much interested in explaining how. So we want to describe, to analyze, to investigate the process of happening. How something happens, how rain comes, not why rain comes. This is the characteristic of the scientific stage. And he believed that this is the final stage, and this is the stage of positive science. So he believed that the time for religion, the time for philosophy is over. Now this is the time to have only positive sciences. And by positive sciences, he meant a sort of science which is only based on findings of sense, on the ideas which are given to us by our senses, experimental ideas. So if you want to have a proper, for example, sociology, a proper economics, a proper psychology, you must only base it upon experimental knowledge, sensual data. This was the idea of Auguste Comte, and it's interesting that although he was against religion, but he said that positivism itself can be considered as a religion which serves human being. So the object of worship of this new religion was human being. It was a form of, or original form of, humanism. And he also, in some of his talks, introduced himself as the messenger of this humanism, and he found some people who were interested in his ideas in France, in England, in North and South America, and they even established some temples to worship human being. So you see that how he himself again went into the religious stage. Anyway, this idea of Auguste Comte was very much criticized by philosophers and by theologians, and many people believe that he had wrong idea about the relation between theology, philosophy, and science. These three are not parallel to each other. They do not replace each other. It's not the case that either you must be a religious or a philosopher or a scientist. You may have all these three attitudes towards the same phenomenon. If a rain comes, you can have scientific explanation of the rain and at the same time believe in causal explanation and at the same time believe that it's God who sends rains. It's not because we didn't know why rain comes, so we believed in God, and now that we know how rain comes and how rain is formed, so we don't need to believe in God. This is totally wrong. Of course, we don't have that much time to discuss. We are just talking about the history of philosophy in the West. But inshallah, in future, I hope this will be clearly understood. In general, we can say that there were two main currents in West in this period. The first major current was rationalist current, rationalist attitude towards philosophy. And the second, empiricist and empirical philosophy. So, a famous example of the rationalist attitude towards philosophy was Hegel. In the 19th century, you can refer to Hegel as a famous rationalist person. And a famous example for empirical philosophy, or interested for someone to be interested in empiricism, was Auguste Comte, who can be considered as the founder of positivism, and also later it was followed by other people even in the 20th century, like, for example, Bertrand Russell and Carnap and others. Many people who were religious and they wanted to philosophize, they were interested in rationalist attitude towards philosophy. Of course, there were some rationalists, some people, some Hegelians, for example, who denied the existence of God. But we could say in general, the rationalist attitude towards philosophy was more in favor of belief in God, and the empirical attitude was more in favor of denial of existence of God. Of course, you can be empiricist and at the same time believe in God. But the natural tendency among the empiricists was to deny or at least have doubt about the supernatural. Because when you say that our knowledge is only limited to what is given to us by our senses, so because your sense cannot make any judgment about supernatural, so at most you can be in doubt. If you don't want to deny, at most you can just be in doubt. The only way to believe in the supernatural is to believe that there are some other ways open to us to discover the truth. So when we cannot understand something by our sense, a visual sense or hearing or other ways of sensing, there may be other ways open to us. But if someone says that I only accept what is given to me through my five senses, so there is no way to accept the supernatural, like for example God, like angels and others. So these people, many empiricists were not religious. Of course, there were exceptions, but many of them had this tendency. There have been two reactions in relation to objective idealism of Hegel. One reaction was made by a Danish cleric, a Danish priest, Søren Kierkegaard. Of course, in Danish language, it's called Kierkegaard, but in English, they call it Kierkegaard. So this Danish cleric had, for the first time, initiatives for the establishment of existentialism, which is one of the important contemporary philosophies. He had the idea that Hegelian philosophy, which was first formed because of interest in free will and the freedom of spirit, deviated from its own original way because it late denied freedom and said that everything is only one or another idea in the mind of the spirit, and the whole process of the history is fixed up, so there is no way that much left to exercise your free will. So Kierkegaard wanted to emphasize on human free will, on personal responsibility, especially personal responsibility in front of God, the Almighty, and therefore he wanted to split from the idea of Hegel and objective idealism, and he founded and formed, of course, with also some influences by phenomenology, which was founded by some people like Husserl. He founded and formed the very famous philosophical school of our contemporary age, and that was, as I said, existentialism. It's important to know that Kierkegaard himself was a priest, a believer in God, and he says that it is closeness, nearness, and relation to God which makes a man human. So without having relation with God, a man is not a real man. It's closeness, nearness, and relation to God which makes a man human. But some people who later embraced existentialism, they were not believers in God, because there were two groups of existentialists. Theist existentialist and atheist existentialist. Like, for example, Heidegger. Heidegger also was an existentialist. Or Sartre was an existentialist. There were also other existentialists, but not all of them were believing in God or disbelieving in God. This is why writers of philosophy, they frequently say that we have two currents among existentialists: theistic current and atheistic current. The second reaction to Hegelian philosophy to objective idealism was initiated by Karl Marx. Karl Marx was a Jewish-born German, and he was interested basically in the ideas of Hegel, but he was not totally satisfied with the ideas of Hegel. So he took something from Hegel, and he also took something from Feuerbach, and then mixed them together, and with his, some of his own ideas, he presented Marxism with the help of Engels. So the ideas that Marx took from Hegel was mostly the logic of explaining events, dialectic, logic of dialectic. Of course, he made it upside down. Unfortunately, there is not that much time to go into details. And he also took the fundamentality of history from Hegel, but he took materialism from Feuerbach, because Hegel himself believed in God. So Marx took materialism and denial of God and the idea that everything is only material from Feuerbach. So he put them together and presented Marxism. In Marxism, everything is based on opposition, on tazad. And according to Marx, the most important and the most basic factor in human life and the society is economics. And you can explain everything. You can explain philosophy, art, sciences, everything that happened in the society according to the economical relations that exist among people and according to the means of production. And he said that human society must go through different stages, starting with the first and original communism and ending with the final communism. So according to him, the West had to witness capitalism and then socialism and then communism, in which there will be no private possessions, no ownership, and no need for having a state or government. But the history of West disproved the idea of Marx, and unlike what he predicted, many countries without experiencing capitalism went directly to socialism, and also the places that he predicted to be the most appropriate places for socialism never experienced socialism, although they were very capitalistic. And also the whole collapse of the communist bloc in the world has caused lack of interest nowadays in Marxism. But still there are some people who believe in Marxism. You may find some of them. But as a general, this school, which was sometimes very popular and attracting many people, especially those who were interested in social reforms and in fighting against imperialism and many revolutionary people, nowadays had its very weak position. At the end, we would like to mention just one school of philosophy which belongs to the 20th century, and that is pragmatism. This is the only philosophical thought which was originally formed in the United States. And the idea of pragmatism was first put forward by a person called Charles Peirce. But as a philosophy, you must mention William James as its founder. The idea of pragmatism is that nothing is true except that it works, except that it has practical use. And they say that even we can define the truth as having practical use. So sometimes you may say that, okay, this can be considered as a sign for being true. If something is true, it must be working, it must be useful, it must be helpful. But they went so far that they said, truth means just to have some beneficial usage, to be practical, practically useful. If, for example, the idea of God is useful for us, so God is true. If God is not useful for us, so that's false. Or, for example, if scientific matters prove to be useful, so they are true. If they are not useful, they are false. So this is the idea of pragmatism. So indeed, these people reduced truth and falsity into the practical usefulness or uselessness. And they are impressed by empiricists like Hume. But they are also different from many of empiricists because they very much focus and emphasis on the spiritual experiences, on the religious experiences. William James himself was a believer in God, and he thought that belief in God is very useful, especially belief in God's power and God's mercifulness. And he was very much in favor of worshiping God and prayer. And he himself had some problems that he could cure only by worshiping God. So, in general, we can say that after Renaissance, there was no unique, there was no single, there was no predominant school of philosophy in the West. There were different forms of philosophies, and there were ups and downs. Sometimes some philosophy was in its climax, sometimes was in decline. And this is totally different from the history of philosophy in Islamic world. In Islamic world, there were changes, there were new ideas, there were different attitudes, but all in the same line. And you could always find the same line going forward, not going up and then totally down, saying something and then after one century saying something totally against it. So this is something that the author mentions here as a significant difference between history of Islamic philosophy and history of Western philosophy. In this way, we finish our discussion about the history of philosophy, and inshallah, from next session, we will start our discussions about the philosophy, and we will have some introductory discussions about the meaning of philosophy, about the significance of philosophy, about the relation between philosophy and science and other disciplines, inshallah. Wa akhiru da'wana, and alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.